We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. Work, family, friends, a million pressing social issues, and an expectation to be on 24/7, sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit the reset button. That's when you reach for an ice-cold Coors Light, the beer that's made to chill. Listen, there's a lot going on in Green Bay right now, and I feel like we could all use a moment to chill with a Coors Light. See, Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's literally made to chill. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies, perfect for a moment to unwind. Coors Light is what I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in their all-new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado, and as always, celebrate.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, your one-stop shop for all Packers news and analysis from friends and fans of the green and gold. My name is Mike Wendland. Joining me, as always, Tyler Grizzagor from a couple time zones over. And Tyler, how's your 4th of July week been going, and are you ready to talk some cornerback play?
My 4th of July has actually been pretty relaxing. I haven't done much of anything, to be honest with you. I'm not out there in typical 4th of July fashion, cooking out and sitting by the pool and stuff. I'm not really doing that. Just didn't really happen this year. I think it's probably because it fell on a Thursday. But this corner group, I can't actually wait to talk about it because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about. And I actually had a lot of fun putting this list together, going through the opponents for the Packers for the 2019 season and just kind of getting a quick glimpse at who they're going to be facing, at least the receiver group, who they're going to be facing this year.
No, I agree with you. I did the exact same thing. I went through all the opponents, looked through their rosters, and just – There is a lot of talented corners. My finalists ended up being like 35 names, and pairing that down to 10 was very, very tough. And I'm pretty sure we have essentially the same top 10 just in a different order, so we made our combined list. And I do like the list that we did come up with as well. There's a lot of other names as well. And for those of you who haven't been paying attention or were off the podcast for a little bit, we've been, as a group, going through position by position for the top 10 opponents at per position that the Packers would be facing over the 2019 season. And Tyler and I did get the cornerback group, and there's a lot of all-pro nods, a lot of Pro Bowl nods, and a lot of accolades and name recognition among these top 10 corners, and it is quite the daunting list. Maybe a little more daunting if it had been 2013, 2014, but still a very tough list in and of itself from players the Packers are going to have to play this year, especially Davante Adams.
Yeah, he's going to earn that contract this year, that's for certain.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure I think at least 8 of these guys, if not 9 of them on our top 10, will be matched up almost exclusively on Adams as the season goes on. So I guess with that being said, we might as well just hop right in. We'll start with some guys that aren't in our top 10, but guys just to pay attention to. There's a lot of young guys, including guys like Dante Jackson in Carolina, DeAndre Baker from the Giants, Garyon Conley in Oakland still there, Fabian Moreau, Jordan Lewis, Sidney Jones. There's a lot of young corners who are on their way up. They're not top 10 yet. But Tyler, what are your odds of some of these guys maybe jumping into like a top 10 list as the year goes on?
Yeah, I think out of the guys that you just mentioned there, Dante Jackson is well on his way into that discussion, as is Garion Conley. If you kind of look back at Oakland's year last year, he really kind of started to put together a really solid campaign last year, and I'm really excited to see what he can do in 2019 with yet another NFL offseason under his belt. He's a guy that I think we'll be talking about pretty highly going into the 2020 season next year. So, Dante Jackson, Garion Conley, DeAndre Baker is going to be a rookie, but he's going to be asked to do a lot for that Giants defense. Sidney Jones, I think we could probably still call him a relative rookie. He didn't play most of last year. I think he got some snaps at the end of the year. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong. Jordan Lewis has been really good, aside of another guy that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. And then Fabian Moreau with Quentin Dunbar, with Josh Norman in Washington. But we'll talk about Josh Norman a little bit later. But Fabian Moreau, another guy who's kind of young, but he's got some hype to him, and just there's a lot of potential in the second tier, I guess we could call it, of corners. And if they start putting it together, could make the schedule even harder for these Packers receivers.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by Sidney Jones. He came in as a almost top 10 caliber pick before he got hurt in the lead up to the draft. And I look back at that Washington Huskies secondary when you had Sidney Jones, Kevin King, Buda Baker. Taylor Rapp was a young kid on that team as well. That secondary was just absolutely stacked, and Jones was seen as the best of them until he got hurt, and Philly may have gotten a steal with drafting him and letting him stash for a little bit. It was a strategy that the Trent Baalke 49ers tried for year after year after year, and none of them worked. This one looks like it may be actually going a team's way with Sidney Jones. And along with the other guys, I agree with you. Jordan Lewis, he has problems with his height that could hurt him a little bit as far as how he matches up against some of these top-flight guys. Like, I don't think he's going to do well against bigger, stronger receivers like Davante Adams or like a Julio Jones if they had to play Atlanta, things like that. But Jones, Conley, I think he said, is on the verge of making that jump. And Dante Jackson's a very popular pick to be a Pro Bowler this year. And it's going to be very interesting to see how these guys really develop as some of these older names that are going to be on our list start to hit the wall, so to speak. Maybe they start to fade off a little bit, and as they get into their 30s and as they continue to age out of the NFL, so to speak. That being said as well, we did have three honorable mentions that just missed on our top 10 list, and I want to double check to see if any of them made my top 10. No, they were my next three guys, or three of my next six as well, just outside the top 10, and that's Ronald Darby, Kendall Fuller, and Jason Verrett. And I guess Darby, inconsistency for me is a big thing. He's at times going to be very hit or miss. Kendall Fuller, a very good young corner. That was a steal to get him in the Alex Smith trade by Kansas City. That was just an absolute fleecing. And Jason Verrett, I guarantee you, would have been on this list if he had ever been able to stay on the field. He's the Kevin King of the West Coast.
I don't want to put Kevin King in his category yet, but I understand what you're trying to get at with that. It's just that he's got all the potential in the world. He's actually shown already that he can be, I would probably say, an all-pro level corner. He just can't stay on the field. It's actually very sad to see because he just has so much potential. But I think he's landed in San Francisco now. I think that's where we had him pegged. And if he's able to stay healthy with the rest of that secondary, that could be a very good group.
No, absolutely, and that's that keyword there. With not only him, but also his running mate at corner staying healthy. But with that being said, it might as well just hop right into our top 10. This is quite the list of guys, and only one repeat team. So only one team, if my comprehension is right, since I just have last names in front of me, has two players in this top 10. Coming in at number 10 of the corners the Packers have to face this year is Byron Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. Jones, one of the most recent combine marvels. He dominated everything coming out of, I think it was UConn, and came in as a safety. Really couldn't find his niche at that position with Dallas. They moved him to corner last year, and he really stepped up and held his own and really helped balance the team after Orlando Scandrick started to fade away and Morris Claiborne had left and all the other corners had really struggled a little bit, and Jones really solidified that group. And with his size and speed combo, he is a guy who's just getting better and better as he gets adjusted to that position a bit more. And he's a guy who I think is going to be climbing this list as well very quickly with all the skills that he has. And Dallas may finally have a first-round pick that has panned out on defense.
Yeah, and he's going to be getting most of the wide receiver one duties, so he's going to get his true test this year. Another guy that Dallas has in their secondary who could be on the rise, a former second-round pick, Chidobe Awuzie. You know, again, the secondaries that are being built around the NFL are just becoming so much more deeper and so much better at the 1, 2, and 3 position on the depth chart. Byron Jones, though, he's almost tailor-made for that zone system that they run in Dallas, and he just to me, obviously he was a combine darling. He's still kind of learning the position. Obviously, he's kind of gotten a good handle on it. We put him in our top 10 for opponents that the Packers are going to face, specifically the receivers, and I'm excited to see what he can do, but at the same time, I do feel like Davante Adams is maybe going to be able to have his way with him just because he's still kind of learning the position and some of the intricacies of that.
No, that's the big thing with Jones. I agree with you on that 100%, is that his technique at times can be a little bit off and he relies a little too much on his athleticism at times. But when he is on, when he is matched up, he did a pretty good job against guys like Beckham in years past, I think. I think it's going to be a fun test for Adams, but I do think the edge would go to Davante Adams, which would happen with, I think, all of these. But Jones is a good start for that as well. Coming in at number 9 on our top 10 corners for the Packers to face is a guy I've seen plenty of, having lived in Iowa for a long time, and that's Desmond King of the L.A. Chargers. This guy, how is he a third-day pick? He's an elite returner. He is a great corner. He's one of the best tackling corners I've seen in the NFL in the last couple years. This guy has already stepped up as a top 10 corner, potentially in the NFL, and he is only getting better. And he's going to be a guy that he's not going to be dealing with Davante Adams as much. He'll be dealing with a lot of these young guys and guys like Geronimo Allison and MVS and EQ. And it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with the physical play that he brings and just the savvy play he brings. He came in almost like a veteran as a rookie. He was mature way beyond his years as a corner, and he's a guy who's only getting better.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that Chargers game because it's going to be an incredibly tough game, even though it's not until November. It's going to be, you know, towards the end of the season when hopefully everything's already kind of rolling and clicking for this team, for both teams, I guess. But that Chargers game could potentially be the barometer of exactly how good both the offense and the defense are. The Chargers, once again, I said this last year, and they kind of fell short, obviously, but this Chargers team, again, is it's Super Bowl caliber, and it's very, very possible that they make a run in the AFC this year. And a big reason for that is their secondary. You know, when you start talking about guys like Derwin James in the back end, and then you have Casey Hayward, who we'll talk about in a little bit, and Desmond King, two of the, I would probably say, if not elite, very, very good corners in the entire NFL. It's just, How do you beat that sometimes? Sometimes you just get simply outmatched. So I'm excited to see what LaFleur has cooking to kind of deal with this vaunted secondary of the Chargers, and not only their secondary, their pass rush. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Packers do to kind of counteract the strengths of that Chargers defense.
Yeah, that might be a game where you run the ball a lot and negate the pass rush. But and even think they had Jason Verrett in last year as well before he got hurt, so that was a great trio there. Coming in at number 8, we go from West Coast to East Coast, and now to the NFC East, we get Josh Norman of the Washington Redskins, and still kind of baffling how he got away from Carolina, but Norman, one of the more confident corners you will see in the NFL, he wasn't the lockdown guy in Washington, he was in Carolina, he's still very good, but there's times where he is a little inconsistent. I've seen some mental lapses with him at times, and he has shown the ability to be beaten by some of these guys, some of these receivers. And I think Davante Adams is a very rough matchup for him. So I wonder if they would maybe move maybe a little bigger corner onto Adams and maybe trust Norman to kind of branch around and try and negate these other receivers and let Adams get all his targets, but then don't let anyone else beat you.
Yeah, and that's definitely something we can see. That Washington secondary, like we talked about earlier, there's quite a bit of talent on the back end of it. And a guy like Josh Norman, I think one of his best strengths is actually the mental part, and not necessarily his mental acumen and the way he plays the game, but just the way that he goes about playing the game. When we talk about the corner position, something like swagger is so important at the position. You just need somebody who is super confident, who knows that they're going to go out there, they're going to make you, as in the receiver, beat them every single play, every single snap. And eventually that kind of gets into guys' heads, and some of the best receivers in the NFL don't let it. But that's why you see guys always getting a little bit, we'll say, pushy with Josh Norman, because he's always just kind of irking them, kind of getting them off their game, maybe messing them up mentally, making them make mistakes. And that's kind of why he is able to maintain his, we'll call it, very, very good corner status in the NFL.
Yeah, there's no better example of any corner getting in a player's head than Josh Norman and Odell Beckham. That was something that I had never seen before that much, and Norman shows that he has that knack of getting under your skin, and if he does that this year, that could be very interesting things against Washington, who remains to be seen what they can do as a team this year. Now, coming in at number 7, we finally get into the NFC North, and this was a name I actually had, I think, a lot higher than you did, and that's Kyle Fuller of the Chicago Bears. I had him at number 4 in my list. So I guess you're not as high on Kyle Fuller as I am, but Fuller, after getting his offer sheet matched by the Bears, turned in a very good year last season. And he had a down year in his second year, but since then he's bounced back and gotten better and better and better, and he's a guy on a very good Bears defense, can be a difference maker in that secondary, especially because I'm not sure what they're going to get from the safety play with two freelancers out there with Jackson and HaHa Clinton Dix. That Fuller's going to be on an island a little bit more, I think, than last year, which could cause problems, but the talent and the ball skills are there for him to be a difference maker.
They really are. You know, you mentioned that he's kind of starting to put it all together. He was really inconsistent from his rookie year to his sophomore year to the junior year and to you know, his fourth year. And then eventually it kind of all clicked for him, and I think he's kind of figured it out. I think the reason I was a little bit lower on him than you were, I don't know how low I was on him. I think he was like 8 or 9 on my list. But when you start to put it together consensusly, there's just a handful of guys who I would rather put in a position than Kyle Fuller. And especially because he's lived his last, I don't remember exactly when Vic Fangio got there, but it's about the last 3 or 4 years under Vic Fangio. And I'm really curious to see how Pagano uses him and the kind of aggressive or non-aggressive mindset. I know Pagano is supposed to be an aggressive play caller, but we'll see if he chooses to pursue that same method of defensive play calling. And we'll see if Fuller is still able to thrive under Pagano, and I just didn't have the confidence in him being able to do that. Hopefully he proves me wrong. I would never wish, you know, ill performances upon a player, but I just don't know if Fuller is going to be able to fully embrace that new system right away, considering how he kind of struggled that rookie to sophomore year. We'll see what he can do with a new defensive coordinator.
And before I move on, a quick last question on Fuller, because I know you watch those Packers-Bears games more than I have when it comes to watching the tape. Is he a guy who needs a lot of safety help over the top? Because I keep going back to the Bears' safeties, because I think that could be a weakness this year, because they don't have that steady, strong safety anymore. Is Fuller going to be okay if he's by himself on an island on one side of the field?
Well, that's the thing about the Bears' defense. The best part about it was the pass rush, right? So the pass rush was so good that they could throw these guys on an island and they only have to cover for 3-4 seconds maybe. And you can afford to be really aggressive when you trust the guys behind you to have your back. So take out Adrian Amos, the safety net, the guy that we've been kind of hailing as the safety net of the defense, and the guy that you trust to make the play if you can't. Is Eddie Jackson going to be that guy for the Bears? I think that's the question to answer, and the question that Kyle Fuller needs to ask is, do I trust these guys to make that play? Should I get too aggressive and mess up, or do I need to be a little bit more hesitant now and kind of like maybe think about the play more? And so that's kind of what I want to see from Fuller going into 2019.
Fair enough, and a very good explanation of that as well. Rounding out the bottom half of our top 10 at number 6, we go back to San Francisco, and we go to an old friend, Richard Sherman. Sherman, he's getting older. He's not the player he was when he was the leader of the corner leader of the Legion of Boom in Seattle, but he's still an effective corner. He is one of the smarter corners in the league, a great press man corner, and it'll be interesting to see how he does with guys like Red on the other side, with a healthy San Francisco team. And Sherman Wilfley is as almost as good as it gets, and I'm interested to see how Davante Adams matches up with him.
Yeah, I Richard Sherman's a guy who obviously Packers fans are very, very familiar with, and he's getting older, but he can get away with some of his athletic limitations, we'll call them now, because he's just so smart, and the good defensive coordinators will know how to use him in a way that'll still maximize his ability. Now, Davante Adams had his way with that 49er secondary last year, and then they switched Sherman onto him, and I don't recall Sherman necessarily shutting him down, but it did hinder Adams' productivity a little bit. I don't know if Sherman's that guy anymore. I kind of saw that move as Sherman taking control of the defense rather than him being like, nobody else can cover him, I'm going to do it. And so that's really what Sherman provides, is he's that cornerstone leader that every single defense and every single team needs. And I expect him to still be a serviceable corner. He's in our top 10 and he's in the top 6 because he's just so darn smart. And he knows exactly where he needs to be. He knows exactly when to be there. He knows how to read the quarterback. He knows how to read the receivers. He's one of the best zone corners, if not the best zone corner in the entire NFL. So even though he's going on, I think 30 or 31 years old, you can correct me on that if I'm like way off base, but he's getting older, but it doesn't matter because he can still react and make a play on the ball at the speed that he needs to.
Yeah, incorrect. And thanks for correcting me saying he is at best at his zone corner. I said press man earlier. You're right, he is an elite zone corner. And the other thing that you talked about, how smart he is he also knows, and it goes back to his time in Seattle, where the line on the rules is as far as grabbing and contact, and he knows right where that is, and he gets away with just enough to mess with you and to get a receiver off their game on their routes just a little bit without getting himself penalized overly often. So Richard Sherman, like you said, as smart as it gets and as good a zone corner as you will find. So there's our 10 through 6. As we jump into the top 5, here's one where I think we really differed. I had this guy down at 9, and I almost didn't put him in my top 10 at all, and that's Janoris Jenkins from the New York Football Giants. Just because I think Jenkins, a couple years ago, he was great. He showed the guy why he was so good at all the colleges he played for. But he really kind of tailed off last year. He became very inconsistent. It's almost a time seen his compete level really dropped. And on a really bad Giants team that we're expecting this year, I don't know if he's going to keep that level of intensity up that we saw back when they were a playoff squad, and whether they can trust him to be the guys that continue to try and ship guys out who are part of that old regime. So I don't know if he's going to be that guy that we've seen over the past years.
And that's more than a fair assessment, and it's something I definitely considered. I just think as far as talent goes, and maybe he's hungry this year. Maybe he's hungry to kind of get back to where he was 2 years ago. I do, like, when I see Janoris Jenkins on the schedule, he's a corner that actually strikes a little bit of fear into me, because he's a guy that can take your number one wide receiver and he can put them on an island. And he can cover so many different types of receivers. And I think ultimately that's kind of why I had him so high on my list. I think I had him at number 2 or 3 on my list, because he can take Davante Adams and he could put him on an island, you know, for lack of a better word. And I'm not saying he's going to do that. I'm just saying he has the ability to. And you're right. This Giants team, we're expecting it to be terrible. They should not be competitive. And maybe the defense can find a way to be. I don't know. They traded away Olivier Vernon. They didn't really add a whole lot as far as veteran talent that I can think of. I'm pretty sure I'm missing somebody, though. They did add a significant player, and I can't remember who it was. Other than the defensive tackle from Clemson, Dexter Lawrence, and DeAndre Baker, you know, the defense is kind of lacking. So maybe we're going to see him struggle to kind of have the desire to be putting 100%, 110% in. I'm not sure. But on talent alone, I understand he's been inconsistent the last year or so. I think he kind of gets it back together, and maybe he's not a top 10 corner in the NFL again, but I think he's top 10 on this list of corners that we have.
Fair enough. Yeah, Jenkins, when he's on, is very, very good. And I hope we see it, because I do like seeing corners and receivers both playing each other at their best, and a Jenkins-Adams matchup is a lot of fun to watch. At number four, we go back to the NFC North, and here's a guy who might have been number one coming into last year, but he had a rough season, battled some injuries, and that's Xavier Rhodes of the Minnesota Vikings. Rhodes, he had seemed like he was an ascending elite corner coming into last season, coming off an all-pro season. He was seen as the next great shutdown corner, the next Revis or so similar speak. But he had a really rough year. The roads were not closed. He had some really rough games in Green Bay, especially that Week 2 game. He had some really, really rough coverage assignments against Adams. But when he's on, he's on. But is he going to be that guy again this year?
Yeah, I don't know. You mentioned that Adams kind of took him to the cleaners, and I don't know if that's going to change. I just think that Adams has his number as a one-on-one matchup. But overall, Rhodes is one of the most talented corners in the NFL, and he's going to be an effective corner. When you see the drop-offs in corners to be completely inconsistent, it's usually because they can't do one thing or the other. I don't really see that with Rhodes. I just think that he still was a younger player trying to put it all together, and I see Rhodes, and I still think he's a top corner, especially in the division. That's not even a question, but in the NFL as well. You know, we're talking top 10, top 12 corners in the NFL. I have no problems putting Rhodes in that discussion. And like you said, hopefully he can put it all together again in 2019. Hopefully we can get some actually good matchups between him and Adams.
Absolutely, and he'll also be playing for his future in Minnesota. There's a lot of talk of with all the crazy cap management that Spielman's been doing, whether he might be a guy that gets shipped out after this year, or Trey Waynes, or so on and so forth. We'll see if Rhodes is trying to play for his long-term Viking future as well. And that's a great incentive to really bring in, especially against a bitter rival like Green Bay. Coming in at number three, this was my number one corner that they're facing, and I'm sure he was right up there for you as well, and that's Chris Harris of the Broncos. Got a new contract. He is staying in Denver. And he is a guy who often goes under the radar when they talk about elite corners. This is because he played with Aqib Talib when they won the Super Bowl. He hasn't had his name called much because the teams don't throw at him. But Chris Harris is technically as good of a corner as there is in the NFL. His footwork is spectacular. He knows how to bait a quarterback into a bad throw, and he knows how to lock down a receiver one-on-one if that's his job for that week. And I have a hard time finding any flaws in Chris Harris's game.
No, he's a little short. You know, for the sake of the listener, if you're not too familiar with Chris Harris, because as you mentioned, he doesn't get talked about as much as he probably should be. He's a little bit older. I think he's 29 or 30. But the best comparison for him is a older Jaire Alexander. So if you kind of want to look at it like that, in the way that they're built, the way that they play the game, maybe not in swagger. I think Jaire Alexander probably got quite a bit more than Chris Harris. But in terms of playing style, I think you could think veteran Jaire Alexander. And knowing what we have in Jaire Alexander, it's very, very scary to be going against that. And I don't know if he has the same versatility that Jaire Alexander does, because when he entered the league, it was not necessarily you need to cover here and here and here and here. Some corners could do that back, you know, we'll say 5 to 10 years ago, but that's kind of a newer trend and a newer shift in the defensive game. So Chris Harris is primarily an outside corner. He probably could slide inside if you needed him to, but he's primarily an outside corner. He is a little bit shorter, so sometimes he can get beat by some taller and bigger receivers. But he can pretty much do anything other than probably play any position. He could probably do anything else you ask him at the corner position. He's a good tackler. He makes plays on the ball. He's reactive. I really can't think of a major flaw for Harris.
Yes, I think he came in as a slot guy because they had Aqib Talib on the outside and another veteran corner out there with him as well. But as he's gotten older, he has moved outside and he's become a great outside corner. I don't think he can go back to the slot. I think, like you said, he's a little short. His deep speed isn't what it used to be. His agility isn't what it used to be quite, but he's still as technically good as a corner as I've seen in the league. But that height thing and the fact that they only see him once, I may have dropped him down this list as well. Coming in at number two, in my opinion, the best cornerback in the NFC North, with the exception of maybe Jaire Alexander if he really brings it this year as well, and that's Darius Slay in Detroit. Another guy who doesn't get talked about enough, he has been very good since Detroit has put him in the lineup. He has been a lockdown corner, and it's kind of unfortunate that he plays for a team like Detroit that never really gets taken seriously by really anyone outside the state of Michigan, because he is fundamentally sound. He's got the swagger you like. He doesn't beat himself, and he's willing to admit when he gets beat by better receivers. He's a guy that you can build your defense around in that secondary, and he's a guy who, to me, is a guy who I would be willing to sign in a heartbeat for any contract as a corner.
Well, maybe not any contract now because I think he's 28, but I understand exactly what you're saying. He's everything you're looking for in a corner. I think you can say, that's your guy, go cover him wherever he goes, and I think Slay is going to get that job done. Class act guy, people love him around the league. He's actually outspoken about Davante Adams and said that Davante Adams is one of the best receivers, if not the best receiver that he's faced. And so, like, as you said, he can be honest, and I think that Slay is exactly what you're talking about, exactly everything that you're looking for in a player to lead your team and your defense. He's going to perform well. He's going to lead well. He's going to be consistent. And it's always a tough matchup when we have to play Detroit now, because since Slay has kind of come onto the scene over the last 3 or 4 years, and he's really kind of taken over that the leader of the Detroit defense role and the number one corner role, because he just does his job and he makes everybody else's jobs easier on the defense and harder on the offense.
Absolutely, and luckily for Packers fans, they still do have Tease Tabor, so if Slay's doing his job, they can just throw him the other side. But with that being said, we move on to our number one corner that the Packers will be stuck facing this year. And we mentioned him briefly earlier in the podcast when he talked about one of his teammates on their top 10 list. And this is a name that will definitely irk some Packer fans who with a little bit of hindsight bias involved as well, and that's Casey Hayward of the Chargers. Because Hayward, ever since he left Green Bay, has become an elite corner. In Green, he had a great rookie year with the Packers, battled injuries afterwards, and it was viewed as a fine move to let him go when he left, because they had some young up-and-coming guys who are now in Cleveland and out of the NFL. But ever since he went to the Chargers, Casey Hayward has just turned it on, and he has become one of the gold standards at the cornerback position. He's one of the best ball hawks you will find at the position, and he was that in Green Bay as well. But his game on the exterior has really grown as well. He is a guy, he is a smart player, he stays healthy, and he's really kind of become a leader of that Chargers defense that is getting better and better, and his team that is going to be reckoned with in the AFC.
You know, I talked about it with Darius Slay, a guy who can kind of cover every single position. You say, hey, number 10, number 17, number 84, you're my guy, and I'm going to cover you. You're not going to catch the ball. It's exactly what Casey Hayward can do, and that's what makes him so valuable to any defense and defensive coordinator, because you can just kind of plan around that. You can say, all right, you're going to man mark him, and these other two guys will scheme our defense towards, and we're good to go. And that is just so incredibly valuable to a team to have. It allows for so many more options than the defensive coordinator, not only to make that number one corner's job easier, but it just makes everything so much easier. And Casey Hayward, he's never really had a bad thing to say about the Packers. He kind of threw a slight not too long ago, but it wasn't like oh, they should have never cut me type thing. He's always been a very respectful person in the NFL, and he's kind of kept to himself. He just kind of goes out and does his job, and he does it well.
Yeah, and as far as attitude goes, I'm not saying by ability, but he has that Charles Woodson type attitude where if you don't believe me, I'm going to believe in myself, and I'm going to make you pay for it. And ever since he left Green Bay and went to the Chargers, I don't know if any other teams really offered him as well after the bad injuries he battled, especially the hamstring stuff. He got that smaller deal with the Chargers, became an all-pro, and now he's getting paid like the top corner that he is. And he's a guy where, like you said, he's a good leader. He's a guy who you can put on any receiver you want, and he will do his best to lock them down. He had some things when it came from as far with him, mostly due to the foot speed isn't quite there with him, but he is a guy where he's savvy, his footwork is impeccable, and he's a guy who's going to keep on working and get the job done. And he's a guy who I'm not looking forward to facing him in November. It could be a very interesting game with Hayward and King and Derwin James, and you talk about Bosa and Ingram and all those guys. That could be very, very tough. But Casey Hayward, our number one corner that the Packers will have to face in 2019. Are there any other notable guys that you can think of that we're missing that could be considered for this top 10?
That could be considered for the top 10. Let me look at our original list, I guess, real quick.
Maybe someone like Trey Waynes or...
Trey Waynes, maybe. I think Trey Waynes is a bit overrated. Maybe we could talk about the slot guy in Denver, Bryce Callahan.
His old friend, Breshad Breeland.
In Minnesota. Sorry?
Those are our old friend, Breshad Breeland, as well in Kansas City.
Breshad Breeland will be the second corner in Kansas City. So, I don't think any of these guys were top 10 worthy. I think we did a good job, as good as we could have done. And, overall, the group is really interesting to me because there's a handful of guys who are going to be good. Like I would be willing to put money on it. You talk about Hayward, Slay, Hayward, Slay, probably Fuller, King. Those guys are going to be good. But then there's a handful of guys like Jenkins, who's been kind of on and off, Sherman, who's getting a little bit older, Norman, who's getting a little bit older, Byron Jones, who we talked about, getting kind of. He has the ability to be an elite corner, but he's just not quite there yet. And then you start looking at all the young guys we talked about with Dante Jackson, DeAndre Baker, Gary Conley, Jordan Lewis, Sidney Jones, Fabian Moreau. And when you start looking at those older guys and the inconsistent guys with the younger guys, it could be a really fluctuating spectrum of corner quality that we're talking about throughout the year. And I think that's so interesting to me because there's only a handful of names on this list that I'm willing to bet are going to be consistently good.
And of course, that'll all be helped by in training camp facing two very good corners themselves in Jair Alexander and Kevin King every day for about a month and a half. Plus facing the Texans and some of their corners as well will help a long way as well for the Packers. Just seeing those guys in practice will help them work, as like you said, Jair Alexander's a younger version of Chris Harris, so you can kind of learn from that type of style as well and technique. But with that being said, I think it's time for us to wrap things up on this edition of the Pack-A-Day podcast, the top 10 corners the Packers are facing in 2019, headed by old friend Casey Hayward. So Tyler Grzegorek, where can people find you? What are you working on?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter, @Tyler_Grez. Working on a handful of things now. I'm trying to put together a Packers Twitter fantasy football league, so if you want to get into that, let me know. At the same time, I've kind of focused on fantasy football. If you haven't seen that on my Twitter, really taking a turn writing for a website called Dynasty Nerds, doing some analytics stuff over there, and then just the podcast. So just Packers Twitter, the podcast, and then the website for fantasy football.
Absolutely, and you can find me on Twitter @MikeWenland. I'm getting a little more active again. I took a little bit of time off focusing on playing baseball and my job with the radio station as well, so doing stuff like that. But I'm still writing for Dairyland Express. I am currently working on some stuff that involves Packers history, more as like all-decade teams and all underrated teams from that era that people forget about, and just kind of how to look back at the Packers and what made Green Bay Green Bay. And, of course, follow us on Twitter @PackadayPodcast. They'll retweet all of our great contributors' stuff as well as some fun tidbits and things like that. And, of course, always check out Ticket King as well. Get all your Packers, Bucks, Badgers, Brewers concert tickets anywhere you can find them. It's right there as well. So for Tyler Grzegorek, this is Mike Wendland saying so long for now. I'll talk to you again in a couple weeks. But stay tuned every day for a new Packaday podcast. And, of course, as always, go Pack Go!